to talk about that, we bring in Mike Vaccaro from the New York Post, does an excellent job, columnist there. Mike, welcome to the program.
How are you doing tonight, Laura?
I'm doing well, my friend. So let's start off. You have available right now on the New York Post website, I'm assuming for tomorrow's paper, you have a column called "The Real Winners of Mets Landing Wilson Ramos as Their Catcher." It says, "The real winners are Mets fans." Explain.
Well, you know, it's been kind of funny, and I kind of wrote this in Sunday's paper also, that, you know, Bertie Van Wagenen has kind of been conducting a social experiment the last couple of weeks. He wouldn't call it that. He would call it trying to get his team better, and that's, of course, what it is. But by doing so, he was dangling some names that, you know, really kind of, I think, struck kind of, maybe fear is a little bit strong of a word, but, you know, relatively speaking to what being a sports fan is, I mean, Noah Syndergaard's a very popular player. He's a guy that people, I think, have invested more in what he could be as opposed to what he's been, although he's had his moments. I think people kind of assume he's ultimately going to have a year like Jacob deGrom led last year, and I think there's a lot of fear that, you know, once you trade him, that will guarantee that he has that great year for the next team he plays for. So,
I think Mets fans were worried that they could just see him in pinstripes and that he would have that great year, and with the social media presence and all of that, that he would be like star of stars, ace for the Yankees.
Sure, and I think I don't think it worries Brody Van Wagenen, but, you know, it's a hard thing for the Mets general manager. I mean, you know, look, I've always thought it's silly that the Mets don't deal with the Yankees when clearly you can help both teams. But, you know, the ideal situation, you know, for any trade is that a trade helps both teams. It certainly would have been possible, given how far along the Yankees are relative to how far along the Mets are. Mm-hmm. But they could have made this trade. Both teams could have been vastly improved over last year by making the trade. And what that means is that the Mets win 90 games and maybe make the wild card, and the Yankees win the World Series. That's a kind of a hard thing for any Mets general manager to have on his resume, that he helped put the Yankees over the top, for better or for worse.
I think that trading Jay Bruce, though, might have made a little sense a few years ago. But so I hear your point on Syndergaard, who was a popular player. I'll tell you, the conversation amongst my family was, maybe 2 years of control of JT Realmuto, you know, maybe he'll go to a team like the Dodgers and he'll be an MVP and lead them to the World Series. And maybe I'm being irrational here, but I flat out really enjoy watching Brandon Nimmo play baseball, even beyond the OPS plus and all the sabermetrics arguments I can make for a player like Nimmo. I just enjoy watching the guy play.
You know, and I think that that's part of the other part of this, Laurie, is that I think, you know, it's funny, Mets fans weren't exactly in love with their team last year, mm-hmm. but they really did seem to grow an affinity for pieces of that team. I mean, you know, it really looked like people were going to start having prayer vigils a couple of weeks ago when it thought that it looked like Jeff McNeil might be part of the Cano trade. Nimmo is a very popular player. I think people are really invested in Michael Conforto. I mean, they mm-hmm. really think that he's on the verge of a breakout year. And even Rosario, who had his struggles last year, showed enough in the second half where I think Mets fans are really excited about what he can be. So, I mean, you know, the whole of their team might not have been something they were really pleased with last year, but there are parts of the team that I think that segments of the fan base really enjoy, none more so than Syndergaard, but those other players we just talked about are also guys that people are really excited about. I think that that's one of the things that really kind of hindered people getting really on board with JT Realmuto, who, look, is a very good catcher. He's clearly the best catcher available, is a better catcher than Wilson Ramos. But Wilson Ramos only cost them money, and Realmuto would have cost at least one of those players and other things also. And certainly it seems like the Marlins are trying to get a King's Ransom for him. I think that's what makes Mets fans this morning maybe a little happier, knowing that these players weren't ransomed to make they're better at catching than they were yesterday, and it didn't cost them these players.
Talking to Mike Vaccaro from the New York Post, and so what did we learn with this move about the Mets general manager? Is because I actually thought Brody was going to aggressively. This is a player that was, you know, one of his former clients and that he was excited about. I thought he was going to go forward with the trade. What do we learn that he instead goes the route of paying for a free agent?
Well, I think what it tells you that he definitely is aggressive, but not recklessly so. I think it was clear to the Marlins certainly want to get as much as they can for Realmuto, certainly in the wake of not really getting a lot for basically trading their entire outfield last year for spare parts. And I think it was pretty clear from the start that they were going to make it very difficult for a team within their own division to make that trade. I mean, for the same, you know, for the same reasons that the Mets have these psychoses about the Yankees, the Marlins have the same kind of problems with dealing with the Phillies, the Nationals, the Mets, the Braves. And so I think that it was clear that they wanted to extract as much as they could from any of those teams, Mets included. And I think that Brody finally reached a point where he realized that as good as Realmuto is and as much as he would bring to the team next year, you know, he's talked all along about not wanting to create one hole and filling the other. And I think he realized that ultimately the kind of, you know, talent they were demanding, it would have been causing more problems than Realmuto's presence would have solved.
Now, Mike, the offensive potential of Wilson Ramos when he's healthy, he might be the best offensive catcher of all the guys who were potentially available. But the key words there, of course, are when he's healthy. So how did you feel about the Mets signing Wilson Ramos as opposed to, let's say, Yasmani Grandal, who was certainly available, but also does come with, you know, because of the qualifying offer, comes with, you know, some compensation as part of it?
Yeah, look, I think that Grandal is a great player. I also know, this doesn't think anybody else did, that the Dodgers were not hesitant to sit him down for various reasons during the postseason. I'm not saying that's why that you stay away from a player like that, but it certainly would raise a red flag. And look, I mean, Ramos has his own red flags, as you said. He's a guy who's had a hard time staying healthy for long periods of time. And when you're talking about a Mets tandem, that likely will be him and Travis d'Arnola next year. You know, those are two catchers with a spotty history of being able to, you know, give you 110 games every year. So
the Mets are going to need to get bubble wrap, I think, and wrap both guys up. You know, or and Thomas Nito or Plawecki or somebody's going to have to catch some games.
Or solve everybody's problems, and maybe have the beloved Jeff McNeil, you know, learn how to play catcher a little
bit. Emergency catcher.
But I mean, so look, I mean, I do think that once it became apparent that the Marlins are going to want to extract, you know, kind of a king's ransom in talent, I do think that the Mets, it was incumbent upon them to spend the money. Now, you can certainly have the argument which catcher is better, which catcher is more valuable. Grandal wanted 4 years. The Mets were able to get Ramos for two and an option. And like you said, I mean, it would have cost them, you know, not only a draft pick, but it also would have cost them international signing money. And teams are increasingly looking at that pool of money as gold. So there's an argument made in terms of just the pure talent of both players. But I do think once you make the decision that you're not going to trade for Realmuto, you had to go with one or the other. And I don't think, look, I mean, Mets fans have seen enough of Wilson Ramos on the other team because I mean, he's a lifetime 300 hitter against them, and it always seemed like he wore out every Mets pitcher that went against him. So you're definitely getting a qualified player and a guy who's a two-time All-Star.
Talking to Mike Vaccaro from the New York Post and about the baseball hot stove, let's turn to the Yankees. And so rumor out there is the Yankees are going to be meeting with Manny Machado this week, maybe Wednesday. And if you were the person evaluating, and the Yankees have said they're going to ask him about this not hustling comment that he made during the baseball postseason, how much would that comment bother you if you were looking to sign Manny Machado?
Look, it would bother me, but you know, the Yankees have seen Manny Machado 19 times a year for 6 years. They know exactly the player he is. They also know that in 2009, they wouldn't have won a World Series without Robinson Cano on their team. And as you know, that discussion has kind of bled over to Queens. I mean, Robinson Cano didn't exactly run at every ground ball either. I get it that you don't want a player to play that way. You certainly don't want him to acknowledge playing that way and almost take pride playing that way. I think at this point, Manny Machado knows he probably goofed by being quite as honest as he was back in October. But, you know, all of that said, I mean, what you're doing when you're looking at Manny Machado is looking at what he brings to you, you know, in terms of his talent and his ability over 162 games. And to me, I mean, it's impeccable. I mean, I feel the kind of same way about Bryce Harper. I think Machado's a better player at this point in their career than Harper. I think Harper might have a higher ceiling for down the road. But for what the Yankees need, for who the Yankees are, and I realize they're a very right-handed team, and it may seem like a luxury to bring a Machado in, but he is such a good player, and he's such a marquee player that it seems like he would fit right in.
Now, Brian Cashman was, I guess jokingly, but maybe not, referring to the Yankees and saying the Death Star is fully operational. So is this a sign? Do you expect then that this is Brian Cashman telling us it's likely that the Yankees are going to do one of those aggressive bidding Yankee things to get Machado?
Well, I think it's one of those, it's Brian Cashman kind of being coy, and I don't blame him for being that way. I do hope that the Yankees Death Star has a better fate than the Death Star in the Star Wars movies, which kind of had some problems. But obviously we know what he's talking about. He's referencing the old Evil Empire references. And yes, look, I don't think, it's not Brian Cashman's nature to just kind of idly sit by and let talented baseball players, go other places without at least making a run at them. I definitely think they're going to make a run at Machado. I mean, I still believe that it's hard. It's still hard for me to fathom that Bryce Harper is going to sign somewhere without being given a serious opportunity to play for the Yankees, because it makes so much sense for him to play there also. But I really,
when you say it makes so much sense for him to play there, the Yankees, it's not like they're sitting there with a hole in the outfield, so they don't have that. But when you define the so much sense, is it just that, kind of that big personality, the big lefty swing, is that what makes sense?
Big personality, big lefty swing, the fact that they are so overwhelmingly right-handed. And I get it, the way baseball is played now, right-handers look at the right field porch just as hungrily as left-handed players do. But he's just a guy who seems like he's been bred from the beginning of his baseball career to understand what it is to be a Yankee, and I think that's legitimate. I really do, and I get it. I mean, no one's going to kill the Yankees if they don't want to spend $800 million on two baseball players. I get that, or $600 million, or whatever it's going to cost. But I just have a hard time believing that at the very least there's not going to be a wooing of some sort. It'd be very surprising if he winds up going to the Dodgers or the Phillies or wherever and never is given an opportunity to take a look and see what's going on with the Yankees, what they would be willing to do to bring him in. But I have less compunction. I really do believe the Yankees' interest in Machado is legitimate. I don't think they're going to be undersold for him. I don't think they're going to go crazy for him. But I do think that they're going to make a classic pitch for him as to what he, what him coming to the Yankees can mean both to him, to his brand. I hate that word, but that's the word now in sports. Mm-hmm. To his career and what it can mean to the Yankees.
Yeah, I was having a conversation today about, it's apparently the Chicago White Sox are making this big play wanting Machado or Harper. And I was thinking about the Harper brand, and I just don't see it playing in, Chicago's second team. I just don't see him playing for a team like the Chicago White Sox. Do you think ultimately, before this is done, is Bryce Harper going to regret turning down 10 years, $300 million from the Washington Nationals?
I don't think he's going to regret it, because I think he's going to get certainly a sizable fee from somebody. he'll be okay. There'll be no reason to hold any benefits for him anytime soon. I will say this. I mean, I do think there is something to be said for a guy who plays the bulk of his career in one place. He's obviously an icon in Washington, has pretty much been an impeccable player for them from the moment he showed up. The only thing he's really done wrong is turn down all that money. if you can classify that as being wrong. I mean, I would love to have seen him play his whole career in Washington. I mean, because it just, that's just what, to me, classic players like his alleged idol, Mickey Mantle, do. And when it's, your opportunity, your call, it would have been nice to see that. But I get it. I mean, when you consider who he is, how young he is, who he's represented by, it was always going to be a long shot that that they were just going to take the easy path, the path of least resistance, and sign back with the Nationals.
All right. Mike Vaccaro from the New York Post. Always, always appreciate the time. We'll catch up with you down the road.
That sounds great, Lori. Have a great night. Thanks a lot. Happy holidays.
You too. Happy holidays. 1:21, time for an update with Harris.